It's the Rob Carson Show. Are you ready to be pod smacked? Now, here's Rob Carson.
Welcome to episode number 172 of the Rob Carson Show podcast. A very loaded show once again, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get to it in just a second. Jimmy Kimmel gets all political. And what happened to late night television being funny? I'm going to get into some audio from that. Lawrence O'Donnell is a political commentator, and he had a nuclear meltdown on MSNBC. I'm going to share some of the audio from that. And I will tell you, I don't usually use a lot of profanity during the podcast. I'm going to air him unedited. Wow. Ew, it was prima donna on the loose. We'll share that in a few. Among other things, I want to welcome our sponsors, FountainOfLifeCairo.com, Fountain of Life Chiropractic. Dr. Alex Nelson is a great young doctor, and he can really, really help you. One of the things that happens with a lot of us is disc herniation, and it's awful. I have it happen to my lower back every once in a while, and I can tell when it's going to happen, and I'm usually bedridden. It's awful. Decompression for herniated low back discs is one of the things that chiropractic can do for you, and it'll just blow you away. If you've got back pain or neck pain or low back pain or neuropathy, all of these things, they take care of athletes, professionals, police officers, firefighters. 8335 North Congress Avenue, Kansas City, FountainOfLifeChiro.com, FountainOfLifeChiro.com. All right, also Grass Monsters KC. They sell terrific American-made mowers. If you're going to buy a mower, and I know you're going to be cleaning up the yard and the leaves are going to be falling and all that, and you're going to need something to tackle it, one of the best mowers in the world is the Dixie Chopper made in Indiana. They sell them at Grass Monsters. They also sell Hustlers made in Kansas. They'll last you forever, I swear. Unbelievable. 5520 Raytown Road, Raytown Mow, GrassMonstersKC.com. Oh, and I do want to thank PodcastRadioNetwork.net for running the podcast every evening, 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 5 o'clock Central. Welcome, listeners. You've already made me the number two most listened to radio program on that network. Let's go to number one, and let's help all of the talk show hosts on that podcast, okay? I'd greatly appreciate it. So Lawrence O'Donnell, MSNBC, on Twitter, apparently responded and apologized for an off-air rant during which he swore at his crew because of insanity in his earpiece. Now, I understand that. You know, I understand that. It can be confusing if you're a TV host and you're trying to look good and all this and you've got some stuff going on. He said he heard hammering and he heard other things, but he was not particularly nice about it. And there's a tape years ago of Casey Kasem doing the same thing and just cursing like a sailor. Lawrence O'Donnell says that a better anchorman and a better person would have had a better reaction to technical difficulties. I'm sorry. Now, I'm sure this probably wasn't the first time Lawrence O'Donnell did something like this. This usually doesn't come out of nowhere. But one of the things that he said is that he was hearing some hammering. I have the sound where he's hearing the hammering. And I compared it with another prima donna who was annoyed by hammering.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer? Where is it?
I don't know. It's
Where's the hammer?
It's on a different
is it on the... Go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering.
Would you hold the goddamn hammering, please? Would you please, for the love of God, would you please hold the goddamn hammering now?
Okay, so Bill Murray in Scrooge, one of my favorite movies of all time. And again, I'm just running the profanity, okay? So don't be offended by it and everything. These are not my words. I'm not saying that I don't use profanity, you know, just whatever. Here's a little bit more of Mr. O'Donnell and his profanity and how he treated the crew.
I'll go down to the goddamn floor myself and stop it. Keep the goddamn commercial break going. Call fucking Phil Griffin. I don't care who the fuck you have to call.
Jeez.
Stop the hammering. Empty out the goddamn control room and find out where this is going on. It's either there or there or out there somewhere.
Okay. Wow. I think most people I've worked with would say that I don't do that. I've had some issues with producers. Don't get me wrong. But you just don't talk to people like that. A little bit more from Lawrence O'Donnell.
The woman talking in my ear was talking about the Labor Day special repeatedly every time we went to a SOT. Yeah, what do you mean in the conversation? Not in the Bush SOT, no.
Oh, he's mad.
Fucking out of control. Shit.
Thank God you're perfect.
Harass and intimidate people of color. The new sheriff of Maricopa County, who beat Joe Arpaio, joins us next. I don't know why I bother to say how to cut the SOTs when you don't do it. I just don't know why. So now I have to chase those stupid goddamn entrails that you allowed him to stick out there. Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Crazy fucking sound coming in my ear. This fucking stupid hammering. I told you why I wanted those fucking words cut.
God.
It just fucking sucks. It fucking sucks to be out here with this out of control shit.
I think he covered them all. I think he covered almost all of the ones that are banned by the FCC. Of course, off the air, right? It's off the air. But that's just childish. Sorry. Childish. And now, apparently, the entire rant was 8 minutes long. I watched it. And he was just livid. And I think that this isn't... This wasn't the first time he did it, okay? This is a modus operandi for this guy. There are some people who do this. I've seen people in the industry who behave this way. It exists. Not as much as it used to, because you can't get away with it. You can't get away with it. Let's move on to late night television and why the heck it's not funny anymore. Now, Wednesday night's broadcast of Jimmy Kimmel's show, he responded to criticism he's received for his monologue Tuesday, where he ripped Republican Senator Bill Cassidy for using his name to push the Cassidy-Graham Obamacare replacement proposal. He's a fierce proponent of the health care law, Obamacare, and has received many rebuttals for his political statement, notably Brian Kilmeade. This has no place on late night television. This isn't entertaining. This is a venue for jokes and guests. It's about popular culture. And I think it's an insult to the great talkers, the great performers, Johnny Carson, Steve Allen, Jay Leno. I think it's an insult. And these shows have become increasingly more political. Even Fallon, not to the degree Kimmel here, certainly not to the degree that Stephen Colbert, who's just not funny anymore. He's just a political tool. But I've got a couple sound bites from last night on what's supposed to be an entertaining talk show. Somebody tell me, A, who gives a crap about his opinion on healthcare? And if he wants to cover this, let him do it on a talk show with, you know, Howard Stern. Let him do it on a talk show with whoever. Let him do it on social media. But people tune into this show for his jokes, for his monologue that at least 25 people write for him. They don't want to hear this.
I had an interesting day today, I'll tell you. So last night on our show, I took a senator from Louisiana, Bill Cassidy, I took him to task for promising to my face that he would oppose any health care plan that allowed insurance companies to turn people with pre-existing conditions away, and any health care plan that had an annual or lifetime cap on.
Okay, now this sounds like it could be the setup for a punchline, which it should be by in a few seconds, because this has gone on for about 20 seconds.
How much they would pay out for medical care. He said anything he supported would have to pass what he named the Jimmy Kimmel test, which was fine. It was good. But unfortunately, and puzzlingly, he proposed a bill that would allow states to do all the things he said he would not let them do. He made a total about face, which means he either doesn't understand his own bill or he lied to me. It's as simple as that. So today, it was a bad morning for Senator Cassidy. He and his co-sponsor, Lindsey
I haven't heard a punchline yet.
Graham spent the morning defending the indefensible. This morning, the senator sat for an interview with Chris Cuomo of CNN and pulled the all comedians are dummies card.
Okay. So there you go. You've gone. There's the first minute of the monologue. No jokes. It sounds like a political monologue, political talk show. It goes on.
Maybe I don't understand the part of your bill in which federal funding disappears completely after 2026, or maybe it was the part where the plans are no longer required to pay for essential health benefits like maternity care or pediatric visits, or the part where the American Medical Association, the American College of Physicians, the American Academy of Pediatrics.
No laughs yet.
The American Hospital Association, the American Cancer Society, the American Diabetes Association, the American Heart Association, Lung Association, Arthritis Foundation, Cystic Fibrosis, ALS, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, and the March of Dimes, among many others. All vehemently oppose your bill.
Okay, so he continues. Again, this is a political monologue. This is an insult to late night television. And I'll tell you, I'm a big fan of late night television, not so much lately. My last name, Carson, is a radio name I use. I've said that on the radio before. And it's because Johnny Carson was my idol growing up. Now he says he's going to beat up Brian Kilmeade.
Sunday's politically charged Emmys may have been the lowest rated in history, but that's not stopping Hollywood elites like comedian...
That's Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel.
That's Kilmeade.
...for pushing their politics on the rest of the country. Watch.
Thanks, Brian. That was Brian Kilmeade. And the reason I found this comment to be particularly annoying is because this is a guy, Brian Kilmeade, who whenever I see him, kisses my ass like a little boy meeting Batman. Oh, he's such a fan. I think he's been to the show. He follows me on Twitter. He asked me to write a blurb for his book, which I did. He calls my agent looking for projects. He's dying to be a member of the Hollywood elite. The only reason he's not a member of the Hollywood elite is because nobody will hire him to be one. And, you know, the reason I'm talking about this is because my son had an open heart surgery and has to have two more. And because of that, I learned that there are kids with no insurance in the same situation. I don't get anything out of this. Brian, you phony little creep. Oh, I'll pound you when I see you. That is
okay. And by the way, if the child who was born with the defect that your son had when he was born, they would have done it anyway. They would have done the surgery anyway. Also, there are children's hospitals around the country called Children's Miracle Networks Hospitals. If you don't have insurance, they take care of it. So, yes, I realize, and it must be very difficult to see your son suffer like that, and you should be very thankful that we have the greatest medical care in the entire world here. Socializing it won't make better. And finally, he wraps it up by actually giving out the phone numbers of GOP members of Congress.
Please stop texting for 5 seconds and make a phone call, especially call these senators. These are their numbers right there on the screen. If you live in one of these states, call them. It really does make a difference. And who knows, maybe you'll meet somebody over the phone and fall in love. You don't know what's going to happen.
Okay, maybe he said something funny there. Yay. Congratulations. He finally did what he was supposed to do. I just find this to be even actually kind of worse than what Colbert has been doing lately, because this is just pure political tit for tat, and there's no intrinsic entertainment value to it. There's no entertainment value to what he just did. Okay? So, there you go. That's what happened last night with Jimmy Kimmel. I wish he would just get back to doing comedy. So last night, just on a light note, there's a young girl, and I watch America's Got Talent. I usually don't watch it in real time. I watch it usually on YouTube. My wife takes over the television about 9:30. I'll go upstairs to bed, and I'll lay in bed and watch YouTube on my phone. And I've been watching this girl, Darcy Lynn, 12-year-old ventriloquist. She won last night. And this kid is brilliant. And it's very interesting that on America's Got Talent, okay, they did this big talent. And there's some great talent this year. But the two finalists, the very end, it was between a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old. Think about that. The most talented people in the country, 10 and 12 years old. Here she is winning.
America has voted. The winner of the $1 million and the star of the headline show in Las Vegas is... Darcy!
this kid's good. I mean, it's a really cute. She's got a great singing voice, and she also is able to. She writes her material. I don't know if mom and dad help, but she's very good. She has great interaction with her ventriloquist dolls. And I'm not a big ventriloquistic fan. I'm just not. So just not a big fan. But this kid is wonderful. She's absolutely, absolutely wonderful. Oh, did you hear President Trump accidentally made up a new country yesterday? He made up a country called Namibia. Apparently misread it.
Thank you very much, General. I appreciate it. And I'm greatly honored to host this lunch, to be joined by the leaders of Cote d'Ivoire, Ethiopia, Ghana, Guinea, Namibia, Nigeria, Senegal, Uganda, and South Africa.
Yeah, Namibia is the incorrect. Namibia is the correct.
Okay. Namibia's health system is increasingly
Somebody tell him. Namibia.
Self-sufficient. My Secretary of Health and Human Services will be traveling to Africa to promote our global health security agenda.
There's 196 countries. I think I heard him say that there were 196 countries in the world when he was speaking to the UN. Oh, speaking of the UN, Mike Pence. He gave him a little what for yesterday. Now, I, in episode number 171, talked about the president's speech to the UN General Assembly, and I was really glad to hear someone tell the truth about the world's bad actors, the people who starve people and torture people and rape people, and, you know, Cuba, Venezuela, North Korea. And the president just is not going to take it, not going to sit there and play nicey-nice with them. Well, here's Mike Pence yesterday addressing some of the same countries.
Today, the United Nations Human Rights Council actually attracts and welcomes many of the worst human rights violators in the world. A clear majority of the Human Rights Council's members fail to meet even the most basic human rights standards. Cuba sits on the Human Rights Council, an oppressive regime that has repressed its people and jailed political opponents for...
By the way, there are 90 prisons on the little island of Cuba.
More than half a century. Venezuela sits on the Human Rights Council. A dictatorship that undermines democracy at every turn, imprisons political opponents, and as we speak, is advancing policies that worsen deprivation and poverty that's costing the lives of innocent men, women, and children. This body must reform the Human Rights Council's membership and its operation.
I don't like Mike Pence. He had started out just with the fact that he looks like Race Bannon from Johnny Quest. And then just, you know, hey, he's a pretty cool guy. I think he's great. I really do. California could legalize non-binary as a third gender. The Gender Recognition Act is being considered. State action is on the bill is awaiting Jerry Brown's, whatever, if he decides to do with it. The main parts of the bill, people who haven't gone through medical treatment to transition to the opposite sex can still request a new birth certificate with their chosen gender. Three gender options will be available on state IDs, female, male, and non-binary. Maybe they should just make it X. You know? I don't know. I don't know. I've got some audio of Maxine Waters turning a funeral into a political rally. I'm going to share that in a minute. Also, the ecosexual movement where people make love to the earth. I'm going to share some of the details on that in a second. This was just an unbelievable story. A young fan was struck by a line drive foul during Wednesday night's game with the Yankees. Little girl, about 2 years old, and the ball was hit along the third baseline by third baseman Todd Frazier. And it was traveling 105 miles an hour. The child was hospitalized. And this Frazier saw this, dropped down, and prayed. And this must be very traumatic for a ball player, particularly when it's a little child. And the little child was crying, which is a positive. But, you know, if that kid got hit by a 105-mile-an-hour ball, she's going to sustain some injuries of some type. And I hope you'll pray for him. But here he is talking about after the game.
Yeah, it was terrible. Shaking up a little bit and... You know, I don't know really what happened. I hope she's all right, but it was just something that I wish never happened. It was tough. It was tough to watch and tough to be a part of.
Now, the Yankee Stadium doesn't have the netting along the baselines, and they need to.
Honest. Yeah, I mean, I think the netting should be up. I think every stadium should have it, but you know, we're not at that point yet. So,
got to figure out a way to get foul balls to the fans, while protecting the fans. You know, listen, there are professional athletes who can't field 105 mile an hour ball. How can somebody sitting there with a beer in one hand and a ball glove at the other and their kids do the same thing? You know what I'm saying? Think that am I wrong? I think the debate's over on the netting. I think the netting is it's time for all stadiums to have the netting, pretty much. Okay. Maxine Waters. Not uncommon for Democrats to make funerals political. It happened with Paul Wellstone's memorial in Minnesota, if you remember that, and Coretta Scott King's funeral was made very political. Dick Gregory, he's a comedian. Most people my age and younger don't remember the guy because his heyday was in the early 60s. But you know, nothing against him, whatever. He ended up being more of a left-wing activist than a comedian. But anyway, Maxine Waters is at the funeral, and she decides to make it all about Trump and about impeachment. I don't understand what place does this have? This a funeral, politicizing a funeral makes about as much sense as politicizing a late night comedy and interview show. Here she is.
I wish I could sit with Dick because I've got work to do. I'm cleaning out the White House.
What's even worse is that the people in the crowd were all in for it.
We're going to sanitize the White House.
She says she wants to be on the house keeping. What? I don't understand that. She's going to clean out the White House, sanitize it.
We're not going to take what is happening in this country. Haven't you taken enough?
Really? How?
And then comes along this person. This person who does not respect you.
Really?
This dishonorable human being.
Really?
Who cheats everybody.
Now, how did you end up in a couple $1 million mansion on a governor's salary or on a government salary? She doesn't even live in the district she represents. She lives in a multi-$1 million mansion.
This dishonorable human being who will lie at the drop of a hat. This dishonorable human being who had the alt-right and the KKK and everybody else inside his cabinet.
Okay, and again, that's a complete lie. She calls him a liar and that she lies. And then, of course, what funeral wouldn't be complete without reminding everybody that the White House was built by slaves?
This dishonorable human being who can criticize everybody but Putin and Russia.
Yeah.
Did he collude with Russia? I bet you Dick Gregory would tell me, yeah, he did it.
Oh, at least they got Dick Gregory's name in there. It is, after all, his funeral.
Not only are we going to clean out the White House, we're going to take back the house that slaves built.
Okay, yeah. That's okay, whatever. She's not doing anything to represent her constituents. All she's doing is going after the president. At this point, honestly, it's ridiculous. So 4 years ago, when art professor Elizabeth Stevens filmed the documentary Ecosexual Love Story, in which she and her partner licked trees, played with mud, and made love with the environment while naked, the term ecosexuality was still somewhat unknown. A lot has happened since then, and the ecosexuality isn't such a mystery anymore. Google trends show interest in the term increasing exponentially over the last 12 years, which means insanity has been increasing exponentially. The movement melds art, sex, and environmentalism, a la having sex with the tree or marrying the ocean. Now, I want to ask you this. Can a tree consent? Can the earth consent? Or are you essentially sexually assaulting the tree and the earth? Right? I mean, isn't that the case? You're not getting consent. They've got people that got to sign a consent contract on campuses everywhere these days. So she's at UC Santa Cruz, and over the summer, she co-led an eco-sex walking tour in Germany that offered 25 ways to make love to the earth. You have to wear protection. raise awareness of environmental issues, learn eco exercises, find e-spots, and climax with the planetary clitoris. Wow, this woman needs to seriously up her meds. The EcoSex Symposium she held in May was 2 days and included workshops given by professors in such as decolonizing settler sexuality and academic freedom in an ecosexual, ecosex-phobic world. So we can be ecosex-phobic. Not only are you going to be transphobic and homophobic and all this stuff. Oh, my gosh. She co-authored the book, The Explorer's Guide to Planet Orgasm for Everybody. The concept was originally featured in Teen Vogue, Why Your Kids Should Never, Never Have Teen Vogue, which told young readers about a concept called grassolingus, which was accompanied by a description of a musician laying face down in the grass and licking it. Wow. They describe being ecosexual as you don't look at Earth as your mother, you look at it as your lover. You also experience nature as sexual, erotic, and sexy. Go lay down in some poison ivy at some point. Jeez Louise. This is the manifesto of this group. We make love with the Earth. We are aquaphiles, terrophiles, pyrophiles, and aerophiles. We shamelessly hug trees, massage the earth with our feet, and talk erotically to plants. Wow. We are skinny dippers, sun worshippers, and stargazers. We caress rocks, are pleasured by waterfalls, and admire the earth's curves often. We make love with the earth through our senses. We celebrate our e-spots. We are very dirty. Unbelievable. I mean, that's bat crap crazy, right? That's the definition of bat crap crazy. Wow, oh wow, oh wow, oh wow. The N-word. Let's talk about the N-word. I don't use the N-word. Never have used the N-word. Never found it appealing to use the N-word. Now the N-word, depending on who you are, if you say it, it can end your career, can end your academic career, can end your professional career. So you got to be careful about using it. Dog the Bounty Hunter. There have been a host of people who've lost their job for using the word, but other people can use it perfectly. What happens if you're singing a song that you like and it has the word? Like Kanye West's 2005 rap hit Gold Digger. Members of the Alpha Phi sorority were shown in a Snapchat footage. This is the University of New Hampshire. They're singing along with a song by Kanye West. Again, it's called Gold Digger. Here they are singing. The N-word is bleeped. Okay, so Gold Digger rhymes with the N-word. And they're singing the song. This video was shared on a Facebook page called All Eyes on of in UNH. Gosh, talk, Rob. Which is operated by community members at the university who have an intent to expose injustices at the school. Post read, a member of Alpha Phi sorority put up this video of girls singing along with Gold Digger by Kanye West on her Instagram story. The girls sing the N-word without thinking of the implications. It's because they're colorblind. They're just kids. They're millennials. They don't care about race, and they're singing a song. And if rap music wants to sell records to anybody other than African Americans, if you got a problem with it, take the word out of the song. This is absolutely ridiculous. This is a showcase of ignorance, and the Panhellenic Council should do better in combating racism. The first step is addressing willful ignorance. This is according to their post. A lot of people are backing the girls. They're saying, so you're telling me you have never sung along to a song in a car? Is this really where you're heading? A gust of wind, and all of a sudden it's a race issue? It is honestly pathetic that you are trying to make something out of this. Stop reaching and focus on yourselves. Another added, a pretty important part of this argument seems to be getting lost here. There's a large difference between saying the word and quoting the word. When a non-black reads Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, we have been taught, and I believe rightly so, not to skip over any of the offensive epithets because they are the words of the author and not your own. Thank you! Kanye's fault, folks. And if Kanye has a problem with it, he should not sell downloads to white people because they might sing the song lyrics that include the N-word. Really? There's a school in Great Britain called Thomas Battersea. They have banned kids from having best friends. Instead, teachers encourage all students to form bonds with one another to avoid creating feelings of exclusion among those without best friends. This is kind of like school desegregation, but it's like friend desegregation. Jane Moore, a parent whose child attends the school, explained that there's a policy that if your child is having a party, unless every child is invited, you don't give out invites in the class. Whatever. I used to not get invited to birthday parties. You get over it. A trend of banning best friends has been growing for years, spread to Europe. Other than Great Britain. To the United States as well. Some psychologists and parents argue that kids become more well-adjusted when they have a larger friend group and can avoid negative feelings associated with being left out. Well, welcome to childhood. My God. I was picked last for every team except for my sixth grade year when everybody wanted me on the dodgeball and kickball team because I was about 5'10 and 175 pounds. And I could kick the ball over the fence and get a home run. Critics argue that the approach robs kids of the chance to form valuable coping skills by grappling with mild social exclusion when they're young. Kids will emerge as more capable, resilient adults. These advocates argue not everybody's going to like you. Parents who support kids having larger friend groups in place of best friends tend to view these larger groups as healthier for nurturing a sense of belonging. However fake it may be, and that's what it is, right? The practice has moved north to Canada. Teachers at big schools shuffle friendships around to expose kids to a range of peers. So they're forcing kids to be friends with other kids. Wow. Now, one study recently published in Child Development found that people with best friends enjoyed better mental health well into adulthood. Rachel Narr, University of Virginia, said, "We weren't surprised that better adolescent close friendship turned out to be important. But we were surprised just how important they turned out to be in adulthood." It's a load of crap. My Lord in heaven. I mean, honestly, best friends are bad. I had best friends. And the thing is, we weren't best friends throughout school. I had a different best friend in fourth grade than I did in my freshman year in school. And I guess I kind of have a best friend now. But I'm too old to have a best friend. I'm too old to have a best friend. There's a point in your life where, you know, you're too old to have a best friend. You can have great friends. Don't get me wrong. I've got a circle of friends, and you know, and friends come and go too. As much as I'd like to say that I'm friends with people, I've moved around. I had great friends in Minneapolis who, you know, I don't see anymore. Great friends in Cincinnati, I don't see anymore. Great friends in D.C., I don't see anymore. I still love to see them when I do see them. Anyway. Man credited with stopping a robbery at Starbucks in July might be sued over the wounds he received, the robber received. Ryan Flores is facing charges for second-degree robbery. He goes into this Fresno Starbucks. He's wearing a Transformers mask. He has a gun. This guy, Craig Jerry, 58 years old, hits Flores from behind with a chair. Flores pulls out a knife, fights back. Two men wrestled over the weapon. Jerry sustained a stab wound to the neck, was able to take the knife away and stab Flores 17 times. Flores' mother, who did a great job, by the way, Pamela Chimienti, described Jerry's actions as excessive force. She said that this guy, in my opinion, went from Good Samaritan to vigilante. Now he needed to stop the guy. He was wielding a deadly weapon. He had to stop him, subdue him, no matter what it takes. She said, stabbing somebody that many times, it doesn't take that many stab wounds to get someone to succumb to you. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Flores' father, Mark Flores, as I understand, he robbed the store, but Jerry stabbed my son 17 times. The police chief in Fresno, Jerry Dyer, called the idea of Jerry being sued ludicrous. And they say that unreasonable malice would be difficult to prove. And that's good because it's stupid. You go in with a gun, you are going to get, and if somebody can wound you or kill you, absolutely justifiable. I'm stating the obvious. There's a guy in Great Britain, every time he hears a word, he tastes something. This is weird. No, he literally tastes, the taste appears in his mouth. His name's Dave Evans. He has lexical gustatory synesthesia. Hey, thank you. Congratulations. Good job. So when he hears the following words, here's what he tastes. All right? This is weird. When he hears the word London, he tastes potato soup. When he hears the word bristle, he tastes pork rinds. When he hears the word conglomerate, he tastes sand. When he hears the word kindred, he tastes cream. Homogeneous, he tastes matchsticks. Eat, he tastes cheese. And then let me see one other one. Oh, Monopoly, he tastes sour cherry. Weird. I don't know. If I could have one word and I could just suddenly taste my Chipotle burrito the way I want it done, then I would have it. Netflix has removed an episode of the animated children's series Maya the Bee after an astute mother noticed the installment contained a drawing of a penis in the background. Mother Shay Robinson, watching episode 35 of the first season of the series, about a young bee named Maya, who leaves her hive to make new friends and discover the world around her, when she noticed something peculiar drawn on a tree in the background. Now, it's a log, and I've seen the frame. It's literally just like a frame, and it's just an outline that looks like a penis. She said, I know I'm not crazy, and I know that something like this shouldn't be in my kids' shows whatsoever. I'm extremely disgusted by it. There should be no reason my kid should have to see something like this. I don't know if they're going to do something about this or what, but there's no reasons why this show, this should be in this show. Robinson was very upset about it. Facebook users have reacted, are saying that she overreacted, saying, are y'all really uptight about that D word for phallus in the log? Netflix has not immediately returned a comment. You got to really be looking here. I mean, you got to stop frame for frame. Who stops frame for frame? And would find one or two frames with a what looks like a pencil outline of a penis. Unless she sees a lot of penises. I mean, just sees them in everything. You know, this is kind of a Rorschach test to some degree, right? Was that a penis? Wait a minute, was that a penis? I just saw a penis. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It's kind of funny. 20% of grandparents say they hate their grandchild's name, according to a new survey. Not crazy about it. This is on the Evening Standard. So grandparents don't like the kids' names. It's generally probably because their name isn't part of it. What? You didn't name your son William and my name's William? 5% say it's too hard to pronounce. 10% wish the kid had gotten a family name instead, of course. 11% think it'll embarrass the child. 15% think it sounds made up or is too unconventional. Yeah, there's a lot of weird names. I have a daughter named Avery. That's a cool name. I love that name. My son's Will. Not Willie. No, Willie. Mm-mm. William or Will. 20% don't like that their name's suggestions were ignored. Of course, grandma and grandpa. And then 32% say it's odd. Just odd. 82-year-old woman suing Red Lobster in Texas for getting her so drunk that she fell in the parking lot. Broke her hip and arm. According to a lawsuit in Harris County on Monday, Marlene Spencer had a 0.31 blood alcohol level when she left the Red Lobster in March. She lives in a senior living community, and she went out in the parking lot and fell down. Stayed 6 days in the hospital, had to undergo complete hip replacement. What sort of grandma gets drunk to the tune of a 0.31. Unbelievable. Apparently, this isn't the first time that this lady has been overserved. The daughter says this is an ongoing problem. And this has been a recurring problem with multiple Brookdale residents. I guess they the Brookdale residents stay there. They need to get out and get drunk. It must not be a very good place. And they must have something open on their credit cards because they're going crazy with booze. Wow, 82 years old? Getting that kind of drunk? The most dangerous celebrity to search for online if you are going to get a computer virus. Now, I am not prone to look up any of these people, but here's the list just in case. I'm also a middle-aged guy, all right? I'm not going to look up Beyonce or Katy Perry or Puff Daddy or Justin Bieber or Calvin Harris. Celine Dion is number 5. Zayn Malik, number 4. Don't even know who that is. Number 3 is Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe. Remember that song? Number 2 is Bruno Mars. I like Bruno Mars. And number 1 is Avril Lavigne. These are the worst celebrities to search online. If you want to get a computer virus, just don't use them is what they're trying to say. A Comic-Con. The Rose City Comic Convention in Portland, Oregon has banned cosplay depicting the Marvel comic character Red Skull and members of the supervillain organization Hydra because the members of the group and the character Red Skull are Nazis. That's it. Now, Red Skull was in one of the Captain America movies, and Nazis are villains, and they're portrayed in a cartoonish evil fashion in comic books, and they're defeated. Here's what the Comic-Con said about their costume policy. Hateful symbols aren't welcome at the Rose City Comic-Con. Historical costumes can be great, but reminders of unspeakable atrocities are not appropriate. This goes for old school Hydra and Red Skull and other Nazis from entertainment properties. Anyone who violates the new rule will not simply be prevented from entering the event, but banned for life. Now, there's no telling if the Comic-Con, you know, while they're erasing history here and all this, will cover Star Wars because Stormtroopers' armor and Imperial uniforms were influenced by Nazi uniforms. I mean, come on, man. That's what, if you look at all of the uniforms in Star Wars, definitely influenced by Nazi uniforms. Definitely. Kind of stupid. All right, well, guys, that's going to do it for the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. I want to thank you if you're listening to the Podcast Radio Network. Please share on social media the Rob Carson Show that runs at 6 o'clock Eastern Standard and of course, 5 o'clock Central, podcastradionetwork.net. You can download my podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, Player FM, all you got to do is just put in the Rob Carson Show. I'm available also on Facebook at Rob Carson Show and on Twitter at just Rob Carson. Is that enough? Is that it? Also, I'm on, there's a site called Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And if you look up the Rob Carson Show, you can pledge $1 a month or $5 a month or $10 a month to me. As I'm out of full-time work, it's very helpful to keep the lights on and continue doing this show. In the meantime, guys, God bless, and we will see you back here for episode number 173.
Thanks for listening to the Rob Carson Show. Friend him on Facebook at Carson Show, on Twitter at Rob Carson, and on Instagram, I think Facebook and Twitter are enough for now. We'll see you soon.